I was asked to speak about my encounters in the Himalayas. So we'll start there and then see where destiny leads us. When I arrived from the West, from London, not long ago, and the plane landed in Mumbai, the airline hostess her last words, "Thank you for choosing British Airways." So, in of all the different places you could be at this moment at the International Yoga Festival, thank you for choosing to be here. It was in 1970, that's 49 years ago, that I first came to Rishikesh. I had hitchhiked from London. It took about 6 months. On the flight I just took from London, it took 8 hours, same distance. Please. Although taking the airplane was definitely safer, hitchhiking and for 6 months across Europe, Turkey, Iran, Afghanistan, Pakistan, back into India, it was more scenic. And there's definitely more to talk about. Somehow or other, I can't think about how to write a book about my flight here on British Airways. When I came to Rishikesh, I had just been in India for a few days. And I was deeply aspiring, longing, praying for a spiritual connection. Because in my life as a teenager in the 1960s, I saw so many injustices, so much emptiness and shallowness in the whole material concept of what it means to be happy. And I was looking to make a change in the world. Seeing the persecution, discrimination against African American people, I enthusiastically joined the civil rights movement of Dr. Martin Luther King, studying the books of Malcolm X, and I was marching for equal rights. And seeing so many of my friends, elders, brothers of my friends, getting drafted and I was, when you're 18 in America and you're a male at that time, if they call you to the army, which there's a very good chance they will, then you have three choices. Go to Vietnam and kill people or be killed, or go to jail and have your name blacklisted for the rest of your life, they were threatening, or escape from the country and maybe never be able to come back. But the problem is we didn't believe in the war. We really didn't see any sense to it. It seemed to all be a mistake. And yet tens and thousands of people were dying, millions of Vietnamese, for a mistake. And it turned out we were right. So I joined the counterculture. So I was seeking alternatives. And at a certain time in my life, when I was 19, I understood if I don't change myself, I can't really be a change in the world. Gandhi said, "Be the change you want to see in the world." And I came to the realization that there requires to be a spiritual change, a change in values, in order to actually make a true difference in this world. So that brought me on a spiritual quest. But then, where do I go from here? So when I was a teenager, I was in the Isle of Crete, meditating, praying, reading different types of spiritual books in a cave on a Greek island. And one day, after praying throughout the day, I heard a voice, "Go to India." So I immediately left my cave and started hitchhiking to India. I had no money. I had never met an Indian in my life. And believe it or not, I had never even eaten a chili pepper. But I had faith in this calling and began hitchhiking to India. And if you want to know more, there's a book called The Journey Home. But I only have a few minutes today. But after arriving in India, I decided to come to the Himalayas and reside on the bank of Ganga, the River Ganges. So the first day here, just downstream, about a 10-minute walk from here, I was sitting on the bank. But at that time, Rishikesh was so different. There were, behind me was only jungle and caves. Now you have to go long distance. The ashrams were just very small, quaint. There were no guest houses. It was totally silent. Practically no tourists. Just a few yogis sitting around meditating. So I was sitting on the riverbank, just meditating and praying for hours and hours and hours, not knowing what I was going to do, where I was going to go. I was just trying to find myself. And I opened my eyes and saw a holy man coming out of the forest. He had white robes of a sadhu, long gray hair and beard. And he was walking toward me. There was nobody else around in all directions. He walked right up to me, and I stood up to receive him. He looked so enlightened. And the first words he spoke to me is, "You do not know who I am, but I know who you are. Now, take off all your clothes and offer them to Mother Ganga. And I will give you the robes of a sadhu." I never heard that word before. I asked, "What is a sadhu?" And he said, "A sadhu is a homeless person who's wandering, searching for God." I thought, that sounds just like me. It really fits. But I only had one set of clothes because all my other clothes got like stolen in Afghanistan and different places I was. And I, when you only have one set of clothes, you get attached to your clothes because you identify with them. And it's interesting because Vasamsi Jinani Atavihaya, Bhagavad Gita tells, that this physical body of ours, the Gita tells, it's like a set of clothes for the eternal soul. And when you wear, because we're in this body, and we're thinking this body is me, we're identifying. I'm male or female, or I'm from this color, or I'm from this nation, I'm from this religion. And in this way, according to our ideologies, the mind is the subtle body and this physical body, we become very attached to this. So because I was wearing the same clothes for months, I really was identifying myself with those clothes. And I couldn't believe how painful it was to put them in the Ganges. So I hesitated. And he looked at me and said, "Place your clothes in the river." And the place we were, the current was very fast. So I knew if I put them, I'd never see them again. I'm not going to describe the kind of clothes I was wearing, but it tells about it in the book. But I took off my shirt, and it was a serious battle happening in me. But then I thought, I'm searching for God. I have to give up my previous ideas of who I am if I'm going to find my spiritual identity. So I put my shirt. The Ganges just swished it away. It was gone. Never to be seen again. Then I took off my pants. I'm standing there in my underpants. And it was January. No, it was December. It was winter. It was very cold. And he told me I have to give my underpants too. And I was thinking, he really wants me to surrender. I said, what is the alternative? And he showed me he had what he called a kopan, which is two little strips that you put around yourself. And then a cloth to wrap around my waist and around my shoulders. Nothing sewn. So I put the cloth around my waist and then took off my underpants. And I looked at them for one last time. And this is 1970. I remember the brand was Fruit of the Loom. And I was thinking, there's probably not another pair of underpants for 10,000 miles. Because India in those days, you couldn't get these things. And I put on he taught me how to put on sadhu robes. I had long matted hair at the time. And then he said one more thing to me. He kind of whispered into my ear. He said, "The Ganges will be your mother, and she will reveal this to you in time." And then he walked away and went back in the forest, and I never saw him again. But I never forgot him. It was my first encounter in the Himalayas. So I would sit on the, I found a little cave, any nice cave. It's not there anymore. I've been searching, but now it's developed. And I used to come and sit in a rock in the Ganges and meditate and pray and contemplate to prepare myself for the journey. And I was just trying to study everything to come closer to God. For about a month, I had no communication with humans, except one man on my way to the cave. He sold carrots, and he saw that I was a sadhu, so he would give me one carrot every day. But he didn't say anything. He just gave it to me, and I didn't say anything. And other than that, I was just studying nature, studying monkeys and mongooses and snakes, an occasional leopard, an elephant. I was just studying in every situation, what is God trying to teach me? And after that month, I traveled north. And due to shortage of time, I'll just tell one little story. I was in a place called Dev Prayag. And there I met this one sadhu. He was probably he looked so old, but he was about my age now. When you're a teenager, you see the world through different eyes. But he was very large size. His name was Kailash Baba. And he saved my life, because I was kind of drowning in the Ganga, and he pulled me out. And he accepted me just like his son. And he taught me how to live in the jungle, because he knew that's the life I had chosen. What to eat in the jungle, what not to eat, what leaves and herbs are medicinal. He taught me especially how to live in harmony with our neighbors. And our neighbors were all around us. There were cobras, vipers, scorpions, leopards, wild boar. And we would see them. And at night, in the darkness, we would just lay down under a tree and go to sleep. And he taught me, if you think that they are inferior to you, or if you have the slightest fear of them, they will kill you. Because this is their home. You can't fight against a snake. If there's a cobra that bites you at night, what can you do? There's no medicines here. He said, he didn't say it, he just taught me that we have to see the spirit, the soul, as a part of God within everyone. If we take shelter of the Lord within our hearts and we respect the presence of the Lord within the heart of others, then you have nothing to worry. They will not harm you. Now, this was what in the West we would call a crash course. Because it's not that I had time to prepare myself. They were there, I was there. But a beautiful thing is, because I was with him, I actually had no fear. because I was with him, I could see every monkey and every lizard and the birds and the animals. I could really feel an affection and a respect of brothers and sisters. But the most difficult thing he taught me, more difficult than that, is how to congenially associate with other sadhus from other sects. And I didn't have any sect, but there were so many different ones. And he taught me, in my opinion, more valuable knowledge than I had learned in all my schooling before. Because it was very life transforming. It was connecting me with myself. It was connecting me with God. It was connecting me with others. It was connecting me with nature. The interesting thing is Kailash Baba spoke no English. And I didn't know any Hindi. But somehow or other, because he cared so much about me, and I was so eager to learn, the message was always transmitted and understood. And that itself was a beautiful teaching that I really needed to know. That love and care transcends ordinary differences. And after some time, we met another wandering sadhu. And he told me that people say Kailash Baba is over 150 years old. He said he met people whose grandfathers knew him. And he said Kailash Baba, when he was young, he was demonstrating miraculous powers. But then at a certain time, he considered that was not really what was relevant on the spiritual path. What's really relevant is to actually know oneself, know God, and be compassionate. So he hid all his miraculous powers. And when I understood that, you know, he was a hermit, and he was extending himself so much to me for so many days, weeks, I felt he needed his space and I needed my space. So I touched his feet to leave, and he embraced me. He was a gigantic person, actually, physically and spiritually also. And that's the last time I ever saw him. And I remember at that time thinking how my whole life was meeting people and having the deepest affectionate relationships I've ever had in my life, knowing that very soon we would part and never see each other again. It was bitter and sweet. But that's the life I chose here in the Himalayas. As I was traveling to various places in India, meeting many masters, some were very famous internationally, and some like Kailash Baba, nobody in the planet ever knew. Just close by, there was the cave of Tatwala Baba that I lived with for some time. And it was on the bank of the Ganges in Bihar State, Patna. I was traveling to various holy places. And I was sleeping on the bank of the Ganges, and another very holy man, he saw me, and he didn't speak a word of English, and he invited me to come and live in his little temple with him. His name was Ram Sevak Swami. And he was a devotee of Ram. He was a bhakta. He was the first bhakti yogi that I really lived with and connected with. He was about between 85 and 90 years old. At the time, I was 20 years old. And we would just sit on the bank of the Ganges. And he had a disciple who was about 85 years old named Narayan Prasad. And he had just retired from government service and would translate for me between Ram Sevak Swami and myself. And I was learning the idea of bhakti according to the great lineages of bhakti. That the soul and God are inconceivable simultaneously one and different. Like a sun ray and the sun, one in quality, but the Supreme is the cause of all causes. And in the path of bhakti, to love and to serve is an eternal principle. And I remember Ram Sevak Swami. He had such affection for me. I was like his little son. And he and other sadhus would discuss Ram's Leela every day. And they would speak in Hindi. They would read, they would discuss, they would read, they would discuss for 3 hours at least every day. It was just about five or six of them. Very old, seasoned sadhus, bhakti sadhus. And as they were speaking, sometimes they would be weeping in ecstasy, weeping. Other times they'd be laughing, roaring, rolling on the stone floor in ecstasy, just a tiny temple. Other times they looked like they were trembling with fear. And I was mesmerized by the story. And I'd ask Narayan Prasad, my translator, please tell me everything that's being said. He said, I'll tell you after. So they spoke for 3 hours. And then we sat on the bank of the Ganga. And I said, please tell me everything. I want to hear everything. And he told me a story. He said, once Krishna, when he was just a little boy, maybe 3 years old, he was on the lap of his mother, Yashoda. And he went into very beautiful detail of how Krishna would steal butter from the pots of his mother, Yashoda. And how one day Yashoda, because she had so many chores to do and Krishna was doing so much mischief, she decided to take a very nice silk rope and tie him to a grinding mortar. So she took the rope to put it around Krishna's waist, but it was the width of 2 fingers too short. She got more rope, and it was exactly 2 fingers too short. She tied more rope and more rope and more rope. There were meters and meters and meters of rope, and Krishna's waist was not expanding, but it was always 2 fingers too short. And he explained how soon other gopis, other ladies, were coming from the village and bringing all the ropes they had. And they were more and more being tied, miles of ropes, and it was a great miracle. And finally, seeing the love of his mother in her care for him, the other gopis were saying, don't you see it's not Krishna's destiny to be tied today? And she said, but I must see how much rope it takes to put around the waist of my little Gopal, whose waist was this big. And finally he was bound. And then he told me that God is unlimited, but Bhagavan's nature is to be bound by the love of his devotee. That is the power of prem or love. Even Krishna, even Ram, their greatest joy is to be conquered by the love of their devotee. So he told a story to me. It took about 10 minutes. I said, what else? He said, that's the only story we talked about today. I said, you were talking 3 hours. This is 10 minutes. He said, that's all. So the next day, again, they were laughing, they were crying, they were trembling. I wanted to know what they were talking about. I sat on the bank of Mother Ganga and asked Narayan Prasad, tell me everything today, everything. He told me the same story of Krishna stealing butter and his mother putting a rope around him. I said, that I don't believe you. He said, are you calling me a liar? I said, no, I'm not calling you a liar. What could I do? So the next day I was attentively listening to hear if there was any mention of Yashoda or Krishna or butter or anything like that in Hindi. And the next day, after 3 hours, he told me the same story. And I became very sad. I actually started to cry because I really wanted to know what they were talking about. I said, why do you keep telling me the same story every day? I know they're not saying the story because I'm listening and I'm not hearing anything about this story. I'm hearing the words Hanuman and I'm hearing the words Ravana and I'm hearing the words Vibhishan and Jatayu and so many words and Ram and Sita. What are they saying? He said, all we did is discuss Krishna stealing butter. So I became very sad. I said, is it because I'm so sinful and so unqualified that you won't tell me what you're talking about? And when he saw my condition, his heart changed. He said, do you want to know why I keep telling you this story? I said, yes! Please! He said, because the first day you came, Ram Sevak Swami told me he had a dream that night. And Ram came to him in the dream and told him that this young boy is a devotee of Krishna and you shouldn't tell him about anyone except Krishna. So Ram Sevak Swami is my guru and he ordered me to only tell you about Krishna. But I'm a devotee of Ram. And the only story I know to tell good about Krishna is about how he stole butter, so that's all I could tell you. And then he said that Ram told my guru that if you tell him he's a devotee of Krishna, he will not believe you. I said, he's right, I don't believe you. And then he said one more thing. He said, before Lord Ram left my guru's dream, he said, but in time, he will make his home in Vrindavan, the land of Krishna. And I listened, and I didn't really take it seriously because it was all too strange for me. But an interesting thing. Narayan Prasad, my friend who would translate, he would take me every day to meet his best friend. His best friend's name was Mohammed. And he owned the Magadha X-ray clinic. And when we'd get there at noon, he'd close the X-ray clinic, and we all go in a little back room and talk. And Muhammad would speak from the Quran, the Holy Quran. Narayan Prasad would speak from the Ramayana and the Bhagavad Gita. And I spoke, you know, whatever I was learning. But the interesting thing is they were in such harmony with each other. So one day on the banks of Mother Ganga in Patna at that time, Ganga flows very strong and it's almost a mile wide at the time. It was the monsoons. And I asked Narayan Prasad, in a country where there's so much conflict between Hindus and Muslims, how is it that the two of you are best friends? And how is it that the two of you could discuss your scriptures together with so much appreciation for each other? This was quite fascinating to me. And I'll never forget his response. He said, if a dog has a master, the dog will recognize his master in whatever way the master dresses. Sometimes the master may be wearing a suit and tie. Sometimes the master may be wearing kurta and dhoti. Sometimes the master may be wearing underpants. Sometimes the master may be naked. But the dog will recognize the master because of the relationship. He said, if we cannot recognize our own beloved Lord when he comes to another kind of people in another place at another time with a different dress, in a different form, he said, we have so much to learn from the dog. And in Bhagavad Gita, I soon after found in the fourth chapter, Padritranaya Sadunam Vinashaya Chuduskritam Dharma Samstapanaradaya Sambhavami Juge Juge. That the one Supreme Being descends into this world again and again and again for the purpose of reestablishing Dharma, attracting our hearts again to the all-attractive beauty of loving service to the Supreme. And through this, I understood this concept of unity and diversity. That the essence of all true spiritual paths is one. But descriptions, explanations, forms, rituals vary according to time, place, and circumstance. And if we truly understand the essence of our own spiritual path, we'll be able to appreciate that essence in others. And if we have a superficial understanding based on externals, then we can declare wars on each other in the name of God. We could hate each other. How could we hate? The first commandment in the Old Testament and the New Testament is to love God with all your heart, mind, and soul, and to love your neighbor as yourself. And everyone's our neighbor. How could we love God and hate anything or anyone? We may hate the disease, but we can't hate the diseased if we understand we're all family. And in the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the scripture that I very much have given my heart to study and to try to practice, there's a beautiful verse. And when I heard this verse, I thought, that's it. This is what I'm really trying to grasp in my life. And I'd like to end today by citing this verse. Savai pung sang paro dharmo yato bhakti radhokshate ahoitaki apratihata yagyatma suprasidati. The supreme dharma. As we said this morning, dharma means, it can be translated in various ways. Occupation, one's nature, one's religion, one's duties. And this applies to all of them. The supreme dharma is that which awakens from within our heart love and the will to serve the Supreme Being. And such love must be unmotivated by selfishness or egoism and uninterrupted by various circumstances in order to actually satisfy the heart, satisfy the soul. And when we water the root of the tree, naturally it extends to every part of the tree. This is also in the Srimad Bhagavatam. When that love is awakened, that unmotivated, uninterrupted love is awakened within our heart, it naturally extends to everyone in the form of compassion. And what is a greater need in this world than wisdom of how to see what we all have in common? How to appreciate unity within diversity? If we appreciate the unity, then we really appreciate the diversity too. That is a principle of bhakti. And according to the bhakti scriptures, Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a beautiful verse. Kalera dosa nidiraja nastiheka mahanguna kirtana deva krishnasya mukta sangha parambrajet. That in this age of quarrel and hypocrisy that we're living, there's a special blessing that through kirtan, the essential inner dormant love that's within our heart is awakened. And that love is eternal. And it's ever increasing. Because the Supreme Being, beauty and love is ever increasing. Thank you very much.
RG Media YouTube channel. Like, share, subscribe.